This is John Finnemore Souvenir Programme.
Good evening. My name is Roger Wattis, and I am a member of Britain's Silent Majority. So I'm here today as a member of the Silent Majority who's decided to stop being silent and tell you exactly what he thinks about things you're probably wrong about. Like speed cameras. I'm sorry, but I think it is appalling that the police forces of this country can charge what amounts to a stealth tax on the busy. Now, I am the last person to deny. There are certain people who are a menace on the road and need to be controlled. Boy racers, Sunday drivers, flash gits in GTIs, people with caravans, people with trailers, anyone with anything dangling from the rearview mirror, and, although it may not be politically correct to say it anymore, the Chinese. But what about the rest of us? I have been driving too fast for the past 35 years. In all that time, I have never killed anyone with my car. I have never maimed anyone seriously with my car. Am I not entitled to the benefit of the doubt? I heard the other day that in Finland, they have no speed restrictions whatsoever. And yet, they have the lowest road traffic accident rate in Europe. Now, this turned out not to be true. But it sounds plausible, doesn't it? Well, that's all for now. I don't have a show up here at the Edinburgh Fringe because, you know, I have a job. But I can give you some recommendations for shows you should really see. The Tattoo is very good. And there's one at 7 and one at 9, so that should see you through. My name's Roger Wattis, founder member of the Silent Majority. Good night. You happy, darling?
Yeah, very happy. Are you?
Yeah. I'd do anything for you, you know.
I know.
I would, anything in the world. I'm yours to command.
Aw, that's nice.
Set me a quest.
What?
A quest. Let me prove my worthiness to be your boyfriend.
What, like in Days of Old?
Yeah, yeah.
You're daft, I'm sorry. Yeah, all right then. Slay me a dragon.
Well, I can't, can I? You know, dragons don't exist.
No, but you can pretend.
No, look, I mean it. I really want to do this. Set a mission for me to accomplish, to demonstrate my love for you, anything in the world that's possible, OK?
All right, then. OK. To prove your love,
yeah?
I command you to shoot a panda.
What?
And bring me its ears.
Shoot a panda?
Yeah, it's perfect, isn't it? Really difficult, but not impossible.
I can't shoot a panda.
Why not?
They're really rare.
Yeah, hence the challenge.
And it's illegal.
Didn't hear you say legal. I heard you say possible.
Why would you want me to kill a panda?
Don't like pandas.
Everyone likes pandas.
Not me. They try too hard.
What? So you want me to learn to hunt, go to China?
No, you don't need to go to China. No, they've got pandas in Edinburgh now. You could break in, shoot one of them. In fact, if you do that, you don't even need to bring me the ears. Yeah? If I hear on the news that a sniper has shot one of the Edinburgh pandas, I'll take it on trust it was you!
I am not going to shoot a panda for you.
Right.
I didn't mean something like that.
Well, what were you expecting?
I don't know, sit in a bath of beans or something.
It's not comic relief.
Well, I'll run a marathon.
You want to run a marathon. You've been talking about doing one for ages. It's supposed to be something you don't want to do.
Okay, fine. All right, give me another one. But no killing anything.
Okay, fine. You must travel to a remote and rugged island within the Arctic Circle.
Okay, yeah.
And stay there for 10 years.
What?
And if on return I remain unmarried...
What?
You may claim me as your bride.
If you remain unmarried?
Well, it's your quest, not mine. You might die out there. I'd look pretty silly then, wouldn't I, if I waited?
Not as silly as I would if you didn't.
All right, fine. So... do anything for me. I'm yours to command, so long as it's not unpleasant or inconvenient. That's very good to know.
Set me another one.
No, two's enough.
Yeah, no, come on, set me a proper one.
Fine. Pour me a glass of water.
No, I mean...
Really? You want to be out 3 for 3?
Here.
Hooray, your quest is at an end.
So So what story should we have tonight?
The ants and the grasshopper.
Oh, again? We always have that one.
Yeah, it's the best one.
Let's try another one tonight, though, eh? What about the three bears?
No, the ants and the grasshopper.
All right, OK. Once upon a time, there lived a colony of ants and the grasshopper. All summer long, the ants worked hard, storing up grain for the winter, while the grasshopper simply played on his fiddle in the sunshine. When winter came, the grasshopper went to the ants and begged for some of their grain. "Why should we give you grain?" said the ants. "You who wasted your summer playing your fiddle." "Well," said the grasshopper, "because, with all that practice, I got really, really good. And if you give me a little of your grain, I will play for you all winter long, every night." And that suited everyone, so that's what they did. The end.
No! You didn't tell it properly.
Yes, I did.
No, tell it where the grasshopper starves.
I don't want to tell it that way.
You've got to. That's the way it goes. He starves.
All right, fine. "No," replied the ants. "It's our food and you can't have any." And so the poor grasshopper starved to death. But that night was the first frost of the winter, and the ants realised too late that all of their carefully gathered food couldn't keep them warm, so they all froze to death. But at least, as the grasshopper died, he could look back on a summer of music and happiness, while the ants had nothing to remember but their drudgery and their meanness.
No! You're not telling it right. The ants don't freeze, just only the grasshopper dies.
Why are you so keen for me to tell it that way? It's a horrible story that way.
Because, Daddy, because you're 34 and you're still trying to be a comedian.
What?
You need to learn about the grasshopper, Daddy. Listen what happens to the grasshopper.
No, I'm not like the... And hey, I'm not trying to be a comedian. I am a comedian. I've got my own show.
But you don't have your own house or your own pension. Put the fiddle down, Daddy, for all our sakes. Winter's on its way sooner than you think.
You're not even trying to sound like my child now, are you?
You don't have any children. You can't afford any children. Step away from the fiddle. Winter's coming and it's going to be bleak.
Hello and welcome to the interview sketch. My name is Patsy Straightwoman, and I am joined today by Benji Arnborough, the athlete who set our screens alight this summer when he won 2 gold medals in that big international sports competition. The one which is like the Olympics, but isn't the Olympics, but happened at the same time as the Olympics. And also, let's say in this universe, the Olympics don't exist. Benji, welcome.
Thank you.
So, how are you adjusting to being the nation's hero?
Oh, yeah, people keep calling me that. I really don't know why.
Well, you are the world's fastest sprint tricyclist.
Yeah, I know, and I'm made up about it. I just don't get why anyone else is pleased.
Well, for a start, your achievements on the track will have inspired a whole generation of young people to take up the sport.
Oh, God, I hope not.
But why not?
Well, I'm not finished yet. If I'm beaten in 4 years' time by some spotty kid who only took it up because of me, I'd be really pissed off.
Yeah.
Why are you laughing?
Right, but seriously, you must realise your story's inspirational.
Yeah, but seriously, why?
Well, because it shows with determination and hard work, anyone can be a world champion.
What? No. No, that's not what my story shows at all. Wow, you really haven't understood my story. No, my story shows that with determination and hard work, I can become world champion. I mean, that's it. That's what I've spent my whole life proving.
But the message applies to anyone.
No! No, the message literally only applies to me. That's the whole point of making it a race. Do you think the people I beat didn't work hard? They really did, I saw them. And their story shows that with determination and hard work, you can come second. Or eighth. Or not qualify, or not even be selected. And there are loads and loads of people with that story, and only me with mine. Mine is a statistical anomaly. You should discount it.
Okay, fine. But even if not everyone can medal...
Get a medal, yeah.
Sorry?
You missed out the words getter for some reason. Carry on.
Even if they don't get a medal...
Thank you.
It's a good thing to inspire children to take up the sport, surely.
What? Encourage them to dedicate their whole life to becoming the fastest and then they don't get to be the fastest? That sounds miserable. Glad it didn't happen to me.
But it promotes a healthier lifestyle.
No. Jogging around the park keeps you healthy. Training the way I train basically knackers your body for the rest of your life. And that's just physically. Mentally, I didn't go to my sister's wedding. Because I was training. Not racing, training.
Well, there you are then. It involves huge dedication and sacrifice.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Huge, huge sacrifices. I've sacrificed more or less everything in my life to it since I was 8. But, you know, the thing is, all those sacrifices I made, the cause I was making them for was the cause of me being able to go faster. You know, nothing else. I'm not saying that makes me a bad person. I just don't think it makes me a good person.
What does it make you?
A fast person.
Right. All right, then. What is your message to young people?
Why would I have a message for young people? I haven't been thinking about young people. I haven't been thinking about anything for 15 years except how I can go faster.
Nonetheless, people will look to you for a message.
OK. Then my message to young people and old people and people in between is... I am the fastest tricyclist in the world.
And you could be too.
No.
Benji Arnborough, thank you.
So, what sort of building are you looking for?
Well, the main thing is that it has to make a strong statement.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We want a building that says something bold about us.
About the city.
About the times we live in.
We want everyone to be talking about this building.
Well, it sounds like an architect's dream. So, you're not afraid of controversy?
No. We just don't want there to be any.
That's right.
Right, but you did say you want everyone to be talking about it.
Yes, we do. I think we want everyone to be talking about how much they all really like it. That's right, isn't it, guys?
Yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, obviously.
Yes, exactly.
What do you mean, exactly?
I think we would like it in an ideal world, wouldn't we?
Oh, that'd be lovely.
Okay, well, let's talk about the building. I take it you want something uncompromisingly contemporary.
Oh, contemporary, yes, certainly.
Yeah, but do we want it to be uncompromisingly?
I don't think so. I think we want it to be compromisingly contemporary.
Modern, but with a nod to the past.
Yes, or to put it a different way, classical, but with a contemporary twist.
Yes. Ooh, yes.
Very good.
Okay, I mean, that's putting it a very different way.
No, I don't think it is. No, I think the first thing you should think when you see this is a modern building. But the second thing should be, this is a traditional building.
Yes! Or should it be the other way around?
Maybe, or ideally, I think they should both be the first thing you think.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Yes.
Okay, I don't really understand.
Well, look, let's start again. I think, above all, we want this building to be fun.
Fun?
Yes.
Yes, and above all, practical.
Yes.
Fun, but practical.
No, fun and practical.
Yeah, or maybe even fun because practical.
Oh, yes. I like that.
Yes.
Right, you know, at some point, you're going to have to tell me what you actually want the building to be like.
We have told you.
Yeah, modern, classical, fun, practical, groundbreaking, uncontroversial, traditional, and innovative.
Yeah. Can it have a cupola? I like cupolas.
Sir Dennis, we talked about this, if you remember. You like cup holders.
Oh, yes. Can it have a cup holder?
Whatever. Look, I suppose I can do my best to come up with some sort of synthesis of all these things, something that's the middle ground of every possible choice.
No. That's the very last thing we want. We definitely don't want it to be middling. I told you right at the outset, we want a building that makes a strong, bold statement.
And what do you want that strong, bold statement to be?
That this building is... great!
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
And it's got to be incredibly cheap and ready next month. I have more to say. The environment. It's fine. Really? It's going to be okay. The Earth is 4.5 billion years old. It's big enough and ugly enough to look after itself. Think what it's been through already. The atom bomb, 2 world wars, the Industrial Revolution, dinosaurs stamping all over it. I don't think me taking Matthew to Sea Scouts in my Vauxhall Saphira is going to push it over the edge. At least, not for the next 50 years or so, anyway. And after that, I have to tell you, my interest wanes dramatically. They say you don't inherit the Earth from your parents, you borrow it from your children. Well, everything my children ever borrowed from me came back buggered, so let's see how they like it. Gays. Now, I have nothing against the gays. Really nothing at all. One of my best friends has a son who thinks he's gay, and I can honestly say I think none the worse of him for that. My friend, I mean. I never liked the son much anyway, so it didn't make any... What I mean to say is, no one could call Roger Wattis homophobic. Where I do draw the line, though, is when they try to take our jobs. I'm sorry, you can choose to be a soldier, or you can choose to be a gay, but not both, any more than I would try to get a job in musical theatre. A fighting man. must be able to have complete trust in his comrades. And if there's one thing life teaches us, it's that you cannot trust someone who might be in love with you. My name's Roger Wattis, founder member of the Silent Majority. Good night! All right, well, thank you for coming in. Ms. Simmons, we'll let you know our decision very shortly.
Thank you. Are you sure there's nothing else you want to ask me?
Well, there's certainly no other information you could give us. It would be appropriate or even legal for us to base our decision on.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think I understand. Mm. Well, then, just by way of small talk, you may be interested to know I have absolutely no plans to take maternity leave in the next 5 years.
Ha, no, it's good to know, but it's not what I... But since we're making small talk now, the interview having concluded, tell me, are you a cat person or a dog person?
Well, I suppose, a cat person.
Aha, excellent. Miss Simmons, I feel you're fit in here wonderfully. By complete coincidence, we are all cat people too. Not that we have anything against the dog people. Not at all. It's just rather nicer this way, isn't it?
That was the start of it. But within 2 years, decades of simmering tensions between dog people and cat people had boiled over from covert apartheid to naked aggression. By 2018, the old political party system had been swept away, replaced by governments of people who like cats or people who like dogs.
Mr. Speaker, we will not be lectured on cleanliness by a party who follow their animals around in the street, picking up their poo.
We all know that the Honourable Lady thinks it more hygienic to keep a tray of her pet's poo in her house.
But by 2019, the rift had grown so great that neither side were prepared to allow the other to govern them. For 3 long years, civil war gripped the country. The Doggists took the West Country, the Catites established strongholds in the Northeast. Pigeon fanciers were forcibly exiled to the Isle of Man. Both sides attempted to deploy spies, but were rarely successful.
So, you're a dog person, you say?
Oh, yes, very fond of dogs, me. Especially, setters.
If you like dogs so much, Tarzan, give me a Tarzan. Good boy.
Oh, yes, there's one. What a nice dog.
He is a nice dog, he's a very good boy. Now, Tarzan, leave it, leave a book, leave it. Good boy. Now, would you please kindly pick that up and throw it for him?
Pick it up?
Yes, please.
But he's just dropped it.
Yes, you to throw for him.
But it's all covered in his slobber.
That's right, yes. So for the last time, pick up the slobbery ball and throw it for him.
I can't! Ah!
It seemed as if the factions could never be reunited. But then, in the time of his country's greatest need, one man came to the fore. Once an obscure radio comedian, he had given up this job in 2013 following a bruising conversation with his fictional child. And taken a lowly but secure job in a supermarket warehouse storing up food for the winter. There he would undoubtedly have lived and died unnoticed by history but for one extraordinary quality.
I like dogs and cats. I mean, equally.
At first he was met with disbelief and derision, but eventually...
Sir, it's extraordinary but true. The subject's pupils seem to dilate at precisely the same degree when shown an adorable kitty as they do when he is confronted with a foul, reeking hound.
Then he must be some kind of weird genetic freak.
Unquestionably, but perhaps a useful one.
Sure enough, the bizarre cat-dog equivocator was disliked and mistrusted by both sides. With him as a puppet leader, an uneasy coalition government could be formed and society slowly rebuilt. And so an uneasy peace prevailed. Until the notorious Pigeon Fanciers Revolt of 2032, when the exiles of the Isle of Man revealed they had banded together into an army and swiftly seized power in what can only be described as a military coup.
All right, Sam. Haven't seen you around for a bit, have you been?
Yeah, okay, not too bad.
Oh, cheers, good as that.
This is all right. I've just been a bit depressed recently.
Yeah, I get sad sometimes.
It's not... Well, I mean, I've been suffering from depression.
Yeah, that's what I get. Often, what it turns out is I'm hungry.
Yeah?
Yeah, Denise will spot it. She'll go, God, you've got a face like a slapped arse, have a banana. And you know, she's right, cheers me right up. Have you tried that?
Having a banana?
Or whatever.
No.
Give it a go. Oh, and I'll tell you the other thing. Go for a run.
You do that, do you?
Nah, I never get sad enough to bother. But, you know, I've definitely heard it makes you happier. It's like a known scientific thing. It's got a name. It's joggers, joggers. I want to say nipple.
Joggers high.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, releases the dolphins in the system or something.
Releases the dolphins?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I don't know why they call it that. I suppose it's because dolphins are always smiling, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are. So, your advice is next time I feel the depression sinking over me, go for a run to the chip shop.
Yeah, good thinking, double whammy. You'll cheer right up. Oh, yeah, well, looks like that's the end of the session, so same time next week.
Well, since you ask me for a story of Edinburgh's sinister past, I do have one wee tale you may find canny or uncanny, just as you please. At the age of 22, I found myself invalided out of the army and in need of a job. I was young, strong and healthy. I had only left the army on the grounds that I have trouble differentiating my TH and F sounds. An unusual case, but my regiment was the 3rd and 4th Forfarshire Fusiliers, and it was just getting embarrassing. Instead, it was arranged that I should be apprenticed to my Uncle Theodore in Edinburgh, who was the proprietor of a flourishing thimble factory. So you could say it was out of the frying pan into the fire, although obviously I prefer not to. I arrived in Edinburgh at the height of the Scottish Enlightenment, and I thus had to fight my way down the Royal Mile through hordes of enthusiastic young people thrusting handfuls of pamphlets into my face.
Life philosophy, David Hume's sellout lecture, what's the deal with logical positivism? Scotsman said, made me think my arse off, 5 stars. Marvel at Adam Smith and his incredible invisible hand, adults only.
Eventually, I found my way to my uncle's. He was otherwise engaged, but I was received by his secretary, a jovial young man named McFarlane, something of a dandy, never seen without his white kid gloves and his black kid rasta hat. He set me to my duties, which were light enough, filing, letter writing, cataloguing my uncle's fine collection of catalogues, and so on. But then one morning McFarlane came in with a wry smile and said,
"Well, here's an honour for ye indeed. Your uncle says you're to take delivery this evening from Mr. Pratt and Mr. Rabbit."
"Pratt and Rabbit? Who might they be?"
"They are our suppliers."
"What do they supply?"
"Why, what do you think, laddie? What's the heart and soul of the thimble-making business? Fingers and thumbs, fingers and thumbs. Say it with me."
"I prefer not to."
"Say it with me! Fingers and thumbs. Now, fingers are no problem. We have a regular supply and they're something we can always count on. But thumbs, thumbs are precious indeed, and that's where Pratt and Rabbit come in."
"But where do they get them from?"
"Oh, well, their story is that they are the joint janitors of a combined bacon slicery and whiskey distillery, and the goods they sell to us are the fruits of an average evening sweepings up. But I think it's best not to inquire too closely again. Oh, and also, you must meet them in Greyfriars churchyard at 4 in the morning.
Now, as it happens, graveyards hold little fear for me, for I happen to be descended from a long line of dead people. On both my mother's and my father's side, curiously. But I must admit, even my composure was shaken by my first view of Pratt and Rabbit, two lean, shifty-eyed figures hurriedly shoveling earth into an open grave. Hey, I cried, did you just dig that poor fellow up?"
"Us? No.
He dug himself up. We're just reburying him."
"Dug himself up?"
"Aye, he does it every night. It's quite sweet, really. He's looking for his wee dog.
We call him Greyfriars Bodhi."
"Enough! Plainly, Pratt and Rabbit were nothing more than grave robbers. But could I truly pretend to be surprised? My employer's hints, the graveyard rendezvous, and also I'd eventually worked out the pun on their names. All right," said I at length, "the name is Finnemore."
"Well, you'll be wanting this thing."
He produced a sinister parcel wrapped in grimy oilskin. I thrust some coins at him. "Here you are, 5 shillings.
5 shillings? For a fine thumb like this?
"Nay, but it's worth a good 2 shillings more. Look at it. A fine, braw, strong thumb, this one. Look at the muscles on it. There's nae doubt the man that lost this thumb was either a keen hitchhiker or else often expressed his approval of things."
So saying, he unwrapped the parcel and I gazed upon the thumb indeed. It was a fine specimen and also somehow familiar. I looked closer. And there, on the ball of the thumb, but in mirror writing, as if picked up from some cheaply printed pamphlet, I made out these words, "Made me think my arse off. 5 stars. Oh! I gave a startled cry.
The owner of this thumb was no alcoholic bacon slicer. It was a phrase I'd uttered 1,000 times before. But never with such meaning. Nor yet a luckless corpse. I saw him not a week ago, flyering for Adam Smith on the Royal Mile. The two ruffians exchanged hunted glances, then one made a decision and barked a command.
Run, Rabbit! Run, Rabbit! Run, run, run!
And with that, they vanished, leaving me to stagger back to my uncle's, my mind in a whirl. There, I found MacFarlane. MacFarlane, said I,
Call me Thaddeus.
Thaddeus, really? Thaddeus MacFarlane? Yeah, all right, look, I recognised a thumb.
Aye, and what do you propose to do about it?
What? You mean to say you knew?
Of course I knew. Did you really believe in that beacon slicery? The thumb snippers, man! They do at least mainly go for persistent thumb suckers whose mothers warned them this might happen, but not always.
You just turn a blind eye.
I do that. And if you've the sense God gave you, you'll do the same. Clivens, man, are you a man or a moose?
I'm pretty sure I'm a man, but can I just clarify, what's the other option, mouse or moose?
Moose, man, moose!
That's actually clarified nothing. But either way, I'm a man.
Aye, I thought so. You've no antlers to speak of.
And as a man, I have no choice. I must tell my uncle about this grisly trade.
You think he doesn't know about it?
You mean?
Aye.
Theodore Finnamorus, the foremost thumb fence this side of the Firth of Forth?
Very good.
Well, I want no part of it. Tonight, I shall tender my resignation and reunite that poor young man with his purloined digit.
You'll have no trouble about your resignation.
Came a voice, and I turned to behold my uncle.
Apprentices come and go, but do you think you can deny me of my thumb so easily? The factory must have new thumbs by the morrow, that's for certain. If you will yield the one I sent you for, so be it, but thumbs I will have. Ask MacFarlane. He failed me once, but how many months ago was it?
And to my horror, MacFarlane grimly peeled off his white kid gloves and slowly counted to 8. My choice was clear. Cravenly yield up the grisly relics to my uncle, or do the honourable thing, reunite that young man with his thumb and pay for it with my own. Friends, I made my choice. And that is why my answer to the question, what has two thumbs and a conscience stained black as pitch, must forever be this guy. Good night.
That was John Finnamore's souvenir programme. It was written by and starred John Finnamore, and also starred Margaret Capel Smith, Simon Kane, Laurie Lewin, and Carrie Quinlan. The producer was Ed Morrish. You're listening to BBC Radio 4, but it reads like a 5.